This book is really fun because Quilting Bees involve communities of people coming together, and they reminisce, they gossip, they share news, they talk about their childhood, and very often they talk about the meaning of the quilt, because there is a tradition of these signs having something to do with the bed. It's protection, it's the wedding bed, there's symbolism involved in those kinds of things. But I have this book if anybody would like to borrow it and spend some time looking at it. I thought before I started out talking about quilts, I'm in the fine arts, and traditionally there's a kind of hierarchy of value. Some things have always been thought of as more important than other things. And I think most art publications would never bother to write about quilts. That's an inferior art form. And the women's movement has demanded some revision of those kinds of attitudes. There's a woman named Hannah Arendt who's written a book called The Human Condition, and she divides human activity up into two areas, labor and work. Labor involves all those activities that are connected to the processes of life. That is feeding, clothing, sheltering, teaching, nurturing, caring, providing for recreation, for constructive idleness in a sense. That is play. Probably some of the religious activities of a community might fall into that category. And when art is involved in any of those kinds of areas, it's usually called a minor art. It's an inferior art, and it's usually done by women. The decoration of bowls, ceramic bowls. We could expand that indefinitely, but quilt making certainly would fall in that category. It's an activity that's related to processes of life, organic nature. And Hannah Arendt talks about work. Work is that activity that's divorced from nature, that in a sense is set against nature, is apart from nature. And I have to refer to my notes. Usually I come in here and I can just talk. I think there's a couple of important words here I should get. Labor is contrasted with work, which is unnatural, not embedded in the species or ever recurring life cycles. It is permanent and public and monumental. It is creative. If art is involved, it is a major or a fine or a high art. And this area traditionally belongs to men. Labor is involved with nature, and it stands in opposition to work, which is involved with culture. Work is building pyramids, building George Washington monuments, building skyscrapers, making great paintings, painting the Sistine ceiling, carving great statues. None of that has anything to do with survival as a biological organism. But this other area is deeply embedded in the life process. And I think it's a very healthy sign that this distinction is starting to be eroded. Because once upon a time, I think all art activities were part of life process. There wasn't a separation between religion and eating, between science and worship. Between agriculture and worship. All these things were all part of the same whole. In our modern complicated world, with stock markets and laser beams and all that, all this gets broken up. So, art criticism is starting to talk about quilt making as a very important human activity, and it's not making it more or less valuable than painting or sculpture or anything else. And I think that's a good thing. We've really had blinders on, and as we put things in these narrow categories. And also, we've celebrated the value of originality, the unique genius artist with his special gift. And quilt making is anonymous. It's a committee activity. It's a group activity. Usually there's some woman in charge. I mean, she invites you over to her house and it's her job. And she's got her standards, and if you don't make stitches that come up to her expectations, when you go home at night, she'll take your stitches out and put them back her way. So she has high standards, and it's not anybody that'll get admitted into her quilting circle. So you gotta be a professional. I suppose you gotta have some interesting stories to tell too. You gotta be interesting. So last night I was trying to say something about these flowers and these orifices and all that kind of funny stuff, but I was using the word participatory, and quilt making is a participatory art, both for the makers and the users. And you never are apart from it. You're not aloof from it. You're involved in it. And I'm trying to say that that's in the feminine sphere. And many masculine activities stand apart from that kind of idea. One little footnote. My method of teaching here, I would say, is a masculine method. I take charge. I don't let you interfere with what I'm doing. I don't let you participate, because if I do, the thing will get out of control. We'll never make it to the end of my slide tree, and that's all I care about, is my agenda. So I would admit that the point of view here is a masculine one. I'm dominant. I'm the absolute authority, and you're nobody. I do hope you learn something, but I guess I'm more concerned about getting through my slide tree. And that's not a good thing, necessarily. No, I won't get through the slide tree if I don't start pushing my button. And I would like to try to keep track. I don't have all of these memorized. So I'm going to try to see my notes here. Because some of these people's names and some of the dates are really interesting. But I'm sure that there are a lot of you who know a lot more about quilt making than I do. I had this class this semester for the first time, and I got a bunch of women together, and we worked out an agenda of topics, and some of the women wanted to talk about quilt making, and I thought, that's a dumb thing to talk about. We don't talk about stuff like that in the art department. But they said, you gotta let us do it. So I did, and these two women made slides at which I'm showing, and made this presentation, and it turned out to be the most sensational class of the semester. And I was really floored by my ignorance on this subject. The images are more than just abstract patterns, as some of you maybe know.
Oh, thank you.
what an angel.
Is there a button on the end?
Yes. So these images have to do with nature, they have to do with work, with religious experiences, with symbolism, and so on. And again, if some of you know something here, please intrude into my role as the coordinator of this event. The book is mainly about some quilting bees in New Mexico and Texas. And this image that's hanging on the wall of this old house is called the Star of Bethlehem. And we'll see some more details of this. But it does involve, I think that the relief technique is called trapunto, this stuffed quilting.
Yeah.
So it's very sculptural. So it's both piece work and also relief work. At the end we'll see some quilts that I think true quilt makers would call impure, because there's some applique work and the addition of some surface ornaments. But I think true quilt making, in the pure sense of the word, would involve piece work. But this is that Star of Bethlehem that's on the cover in this old house in I think this is in Texas, one of the oldest houses in this county. And it's a very large bursting form. I assume that the title means what it says, that it is the image of the Christmas star. I would hate to guess how many pieces are in there, but it looks like a very complicated kind of pattern. We'll see some quilts called the postage stamp theme that involve little squares that are 5/8 of an inch. And so there are maybe 15,000 of these little squares in one quilt. And a woman would make a real commitment when she would decide to engage in that amount of work. This one, this is a 19th century star of Bethlehem. The first one is from, I think, the 1970s. It's a rather recent quilt. But it's an image that has persisted. Well, quilts are made of scraps. I mean, it's a mark of thriftiness, and there's this bag in the corner where all the worn-out blue jeans and all the little bits and pieces go, and people trade these materials. This is a quilting bee in Clovis, New Mexico. And I don't know the names of all these people. They're identified in this book that I just put a slide up on the screen. There was a town that had a festival near Northfield last summer, and I attended the parade, and I noticed a big float of the local quilting bee. And there was this huge hay wagon filled with women working on some quilts, and it looked like they were having a great time. I like this woman, Rosie Fisher, from Prowlett, Texas. And she's working on a quilt she calls the Quilt Trip, 1974. I would guess she's picked up some of the jargon of the high school kids who talk about going on a trip. And it seems to be a rather straightforward motif of these square forms. Maybe she's doing the piecing together by herself, but then when it comes time to do the quilting, there will be this group activity. I was reading in the book, Rosie didn't like to wear tape on her finger. You have to hold one finger underneath the quilt until you feel the prick of the needle. And a lot of people don't like that mangled finger that you end up with at the end of the quilting bee. And so they wore adhesive tape, but she really wanted to feel that needle just at the right moment to turn the stitch. So, and she had sort of leathery fingers, but they were very sensitive. Does some of you know about that? About pricking your fingers?
Yes.
Yes? Did you wear tape?
I tried wearing a thimble on the finger underneath, but it isn't successful because you have to feel the length of that stitch. Uh-huh. You cannot possibly do it with anything hard. So I went around with a mangle.
this is Rosie Fisher's quilt called the Star, and it was made in 1974. It's hanging on her fence in Texas.
Makes a most interesting pattern with the lines of the boards.
Yes,
the
it goes with it. This is quite a beautiful piece called the Lone Star, which is all right. We have these blue Texans in our group, and they should stand up and sing the state anthem here. This is by B. Turner in 1970, and the orchestration on the color is really handsome. The way it moves from that red through the yellows into the complementary blues and violets. I would assume that white out there is maybe trapunto, but maybe it's piecework still. I was really surprised that I didn't realize the relationship to nature in these quilts. And in this quilting book, there was this photograph of the cotton furrows, and that's a motif in a number of quilts. This is a cotton field on the high plains of Texas. And this is a quilt that employs the same motif. The motif is called the Straight Furrow Stripe. This is a 19th century quilt made in 1870, but it indeed does refer to agricultural practices. And I think that's quite amazing. I just always assumed that this was arbitrary decoration. but it is deeply rooted in nature. I do know that the Southwest Indian blanket motifs are from nature, from the rain, the lightning, the wind, the mountains, the serpents, and so on. But I hadn't realized that it was also part of the quilting tradition. There's also the log cabin motif is a very popular one. And this is a log cabin quilt in Clovis, New Mexico. In Curry County, New Mexico. And this is one of the oldest houses in that county. The date of this quilt is 1974, so it's a modern quilt, but it's a tradition that was here ever since settlers came to this country. And it relates to the construction, the techniques of the log cabin. This is a hand adds dovetail joint on a cabin in Montana. And this interlocking, overlapping form becomes the basis for the quilt, which you see here. One form, I'm starting out with that basic cross form, but then moving out to the outside with that same kind of technique of stacking logs. And you can't really tell what's positive and negative. Is it dark against light or light against dark? It's all integrated and woven together. And then there are all these wonderful ways you can make relationships. You can see the large square around each star, or you can see the star. You can see the dark star. I think that's one of the exciting games you can play with this kind of relationship. And I suppose you said, remember, oh, I remember that dress.
Yes, you did.
Is that true?
Yeah. Very true.
Oh, my
kids. I wonder where that came from.
My mother's garden.
Well, that was my great-grandmother's. So there's lots of nostalgia. This is called a double wedding ring.
I have two of those.
You do? Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about the motif? Is it a wedding blanket?
I don't know the history of them. My mother made them in her 70s and 80s, and I have inherited them along with about a dozen others.
We have one of those,
John. Yes. Her name is Hattie Waddell, and she lives in Jacksonville, Texas. And she's at work on this quilt in 1973. Yes. There are two motifs in this work. The large expanding form is called barn raising. That seems to be a very strong image I think there are some 18th century quilts even that have that image. But it's the log cabin motif together with the barn raising motif. And barn raising also would be a community participatory activity of people coming together to help erect this barn. The parts would all be pre-cut and pre-notched, and then help would be needing in assembling it in the same way that the quilt is pre-sewed, but the actual quilting needs cooperative effort. This is called the Nine Patch Barn Raising, and it's a Pennsylvania quilt from 1885. And I was the expanding barn raising is appearance. I'm not quite sure if I understand the nine patch. Does anybody see some relationships there?
It's the center.
Oh, that's right. The center has nine parts.
Yes.
And then that's broken down and expands. And then it's held together by that border. That's not always true, but there are a number of quilts that have that board. This is called the Sunburst Pattern. And Pearl Zajac from New Mexico made this in 1930. And it involves both that textured sculptural relief quality together with that spiral form. That also seems to be related to the windmill idea. And in Texas, the windmill is the baptismal font. It's the source of life. It's a very important machine. So we were talking about different kinds of metaphors last night, and I would suspect that the windmill, if it doesn't turn, it's a matter of life and death. This is called the sunflower, and it belongs to Irma Wink, and she's a Texas woman, and she did this in 1940. There's a kind of movement here. I mean, it does seem to expand like a sunflower. It seems to have a kind of life the way these forms appear to overlap and seem to turn. The squares make a nice beat against the circles. This is, I'm talking like an art teacher here, but
that's fine.
I think that's that the squares provide a necessary contrast to the other motifs. Mm-hmm. This is the windmill, the crazy windmill pattern, 1945. And in this book on the Coulters, the oral tradition, this woman talks about her father putting up, digging a well, and nothing happened. He thought if he dug down this draw, it wouldn't be very far. And so he tried again in another place, and he finally hit water, but it was loose soil, and it all caved in. And in the meantime, they had to go around to neighbors and borrow water. And it was a real struggle to get this windmill going. And then they finally got a successful well going, and they got the windmill up, and then the wind didn't blow. And they had to keep borrowing and going to other farms where there was important sources of water. So I would guess that that quilt is very, very important. Let's see, I don't know what she did. I just like her. She's from New Mexico, Mrs. James Weber. And she's at work in 1975 against a kind of an adobe wall. My mother died in October. I guess I put it here because she reminds me of my mother. This is called the album quilt. And it's an old tradition. And I would guess that this is not appliqué. Appliqué means sewing a piece of cloth on top of another cloth rather than piecing it together.
I would say that it's appliqué.
Yeah,
right.
It is.
On that.
You're
overruled.
All right.
You're overruled this one.
How else would you do it?
No. That is a piece.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
It would be too hard to control the shapes if you were piecing it.
No,
yeah.
Yeah. No.
I just set a new goal in my life. I'm going to learn how to sew, and I'm going to piece together an album quilt The masculine part of you involves the competitive spirit. So,
where is this quilt from?
This is also from this group in New Mexico, and it's from the turn of the century, 1900. The background is very rich. It's finely detailed in a diamond pattern. I don't know if you can see that. I have a detail here. Yes, that shows. Can anybody add any more to the treatment on the white? Is that?
They make them in blocks, and then it's put together, and then it's quilted and.
But you know, that one doesn't look like it was.
Yeah,
it looks like it's a solid piece. If it were done today, it could have been quilted in blocks. That seems to be the present method of doing it, and it's much simpler because you sit in your armchair and watch television with your lap quilting frame and do a block at a time, and then you stitch the top layer of the blocks together, and then work from the underside to bring the underside together. It's a much simpler way of quilting today, a much easier way. But the applique there is absolutely intricate and beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to say about the images themselves.
Oh, the wildflowers, I guess.
The next one is a 19th century. We know the name of this person. It's from 1853. Her name is Mary Manicky, but I don't know where she's from or where this is.
That could be embroidered.
Does it say anything about embroidered?
It just says applique.
It does say applique. Yeah. Boy, some of that is so fine. It has to be a combination of embroidery and applique. Yeah. Maybe not.
That stuff.
Those stems are so thin.
There's a dotted pattern down at the bottom. No, that would be applique. Yeah, yes, they are very thin.
That centerpiece there.
It's an applique and embroidery combination. I think it's sort of a cruel embroidery too.
Looks like it.
The center is an imitation of a crochet piece.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, it's all gorgeous. Beautiful.
This is 1825, and it was made by Barella Keeler Wharton, and she lived in Connecticut. It's called white stuffed quilt.
It's embroidered. Well, what is it called?
White stuffed quilt. How do you control the thickness?
That's what stuff.
Over and over and over.
Do you add more material to get the kind of three-dimensional quality you want? Or?
Cotton isn't it just thread that you...
Unless it's embroidery.
It looks like embroidery. And the way you control thickness if it's embroidery is you go over and over there with just straight stitches where your pattern is going to be, and then you do your over stitching.
Yeah.
And then how much you go over underneath first.
Yeah. It's called a padded satin stitch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's embroidered, definitely.
You're wearing a quilt.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was hoping you'd notice.
That's your basic mind catch. I
think it's interesting. May I stand up?
Yes,
because
please.
I'm tired of telling this story to individuals.
All
so
right.
Can I have 30
please.
Seconds?
You may.
It's the back shows the mind patch better. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. And I found it in New Mexico.
Wow.
We were on a trip from Texas across to Phoenix, and a lady in a restaurant right at the border of Arizona and New Mexico was wearing a blue one. And she seemed so friendly with everybody in there that I walked up and asked her if she made it. And a lady just across the line, we wandered around on a dirt road and found her, and she had two left from the Christmas boutique.
Mm.
Oh. And she does not do hand quilting. She does machine quilting, and I have some of her cards, and I've given them to many people who wanted a quilt, machine quilted.
That's almost a sin, or is
and
that?
This, well, it would have been in my grandmother's day, I think. For one thing, you know, our machines would not have done it. But the hand quilting, if you're trying to do one alone, for instance, extremely time consuming. You'd almost have to be the grandmother living in a home that the mother was running and working in.
Yeah. Would
unless you had a community where you could do quilting me.
It would cut into your soap opera time.
Yeah, you have to look at the pattern. Oh, wow.
This was made in Oklahoma and simply called the Schoolhouse, 1930. Stars and Hexagons from New Mexico, 1975. And these are called Tumbling Diamonds. This was a quilt made in Texas in 1910. And I think I've seen that, or complicated variations on it. It looks like they're all turny or moving, especially with that background, that curved background. Then I have a group of crazy quilts. I'm not sure if I understand what's behind this.
Well, you mean...
No, wait a minute, one moment. This is not quite. This is... I turned the page too far. No, we're not at the crazy books here. This is called the strip circle. And it's the spiral form, which would be a kind of form of growth, which I would just say is a primordial image of the seashell, or the hurricane, the tornado, with the star in between. These are really interesting, the way you can read them in so many different ways. Quirrell Thompson Havenhill made this next quilt called The Diamond Field. Quirrell, Q-U-I-R-L. I've never seen that name before.
Oh, my.
Wow.
And I would guess that she could be called a glutton for punishment. What do you call it?
Satisfaction. That straight, wide line between...
That's just a lot of
line.
Right, yeah.
Or you can do it by machine.
And this is Quirrell's flower garden, which is really a handsome thing.
My mother made a pair of those for my twin beds that I can use with a bed skirt, and they're absolutely beautiful as spreads.
Do I see a spiral form there, a growing form, or is that, or are they just concentric?
I think they're concentric.
Yes, I guess. Each one of those flowers looks very complicated.
Yeah.
Would that be less than an inch?
They're pieced. It's a six-sided figure, and then they're pieced together like that, and then they're set in the pattern to produce the color. The color is set into a pattern to produce the overall effect.
But they're a couple of inches wide, each flower.
They're not.
Aren't they?
No, about an inch and a half.
Are they?
Mm-hmm. Mine are, anyway. Mm-hmm.
This is called A Field of Diamonds, 1972. I don't know where, what state of the diamond is. That's a very strong pattern. And the whites would probably be pieced also, as little hexagonal shapes. This is called A Field of Stars. No, it's called The Star Cross. I don't know why. Did they change their mind up there at the top and the bottom with those dark areas? Did they just want a variation?
Well, they ran out of pepper.
They ran out of pepper.
They grabbed up one point.
This is a detail of the star cross.
Wow.
This is from New Hampshire. It was made in 1910. It's called Attic Windows. I was trying to decide which way was up on this slide, but it probably doesn't matter. I wonder if you could sleep well. This is called 1,000 Pyramids, and it's from 1870. There are large and small units. There are hexagonal relationships, if you want them. There are parallelograms. I think you could spend a long time staring at this at the wall and never really discover all the possibilities.
You're doing a good job,
yes. Maybe that was one of the purposes. This is called Tiny Triangles. It was made in Oklahoma in 1900. And I think I was reading about this quilt, that the edges of some of those triangles start out to be an inch, but when you fold them over, they end up to be 5/8 of an inch, which is very small, which is a lot of sewing. I suppose maybe there was a competition of among women, to see who could do something that would be the hardest.
Well, there were county fairs, you know, I'm still...
Oh, sure, that's right.
So you can look at that.
This is called variation on the postage stamp. And a lot of these postage stamp quilts did end up to be 5/8-inch squares. This is made by Mrs. Houndshell in 1940 in Texas. And yes, this one has 5/8-inch squares. And here's two neat women again. This is Mrs. William Garten and Vera Leechers from Clovis, New Mexico in 1973. I wonder if she just poked her finger or if somebody said something funny.
Do you think they're left-handed? Or do you think they're...
Pulling through?
Well, when you get your needle, you have to pull it through.
Yeah.
There's some thickness there, and it's hard to pull sometimes. Mm-hmm. It still looks like they're left handed. Mm-hmm. It doesn't.
That's Addie again with the double rainbow team in Jacksonville, Texas. This next quilt is called The Trip Around the World, and this seems to be a common motif. I have a couple of Amish quilts that also employ this trip around the world idea. Isn't that complicated? This is from New Mexico and it's dated 1935. The next motif is called Robbing Peter to Pay Paul. And it involves using the cutoff forms, positive and negative forms. And this borrowing from one form for the other appears in lots of different variations. But I suppose that it too is a kind of symbol of cooperation and helping each form take its place. Sunbonnet. Oh, Sunbonnet Sue. Is that a common motif?
Yes.
Not the windmill, though.
I've never seen the windmill.
I haven't either.
This is a Texas quilt from 1930. Here we get into the crazy quilt idea. Does anybody know if there's any purpose behind this? Or?
Well, that one has a whole lot more pattern than the most crazy quilts. Mm-hmm. Those triangles, is that printed in the fabric?
I think it's all pieced.
We used to make crazy quilts without having any symmetry to the blocks.
To be a true crazy quilt, you wouldn't have that patterning. Mm-hmm.
Well, there are more of you.
That's more of that.
They've superimposed a pattern on it.
This is paisley. A lot of paisley. From 1900. This is a quilt made in Kentucky in 1887. It has a lot of light in it.
They've still done that in square. Did you notice that embroidery work? That's the way they did the crazy quilts that I had in my life were, and there'd be many, many embroidery stitches between the blocks.
You see, those blocks are put together with a feather stitch. That was common in crazy quilts, but the way my mother always made them was out of pieces of wool on the backs of a man's pants leg that wasn't worn out, and it would make a beautiful, heavy quilt. But you would put the pieces together with a feather stitch.
Mm-hmm. I made a rope. Coat, the inside, the lining from coat, and I used all silk ties.
Oh.
And crazy stitch together.
That would feel good.
And then feather stitch.
This is a crazy quilt made by Julia Skillman in 1886.
It has no pattern, that's just the crazy quilt.
That must be hard to do to not end up with a pattern.
Not really. Start sewing and put it on.
Because you use leftover scraps of things, and they're crazy shapes to begin with, you see. But sometimes you have to superimpose one of those little pieces over a little place.
Yeah.
I put in one out of order here, it's called the double X motif. This double axia was made by Mrs. Arthur Woodburn in Texas in 1965.
Look at that bed, too.
Yes, isn't that a great bed? It's probably upstairs in an uneven.
Looks like it, no. It's got the rock ceiling.
In this book, this one woman talks about her mother putting 5 quilts on top of her, and she couldn't hardly move, and she just about suffocated. But it was warm. This is a Pennsylvania crazy quilt from 1890, which has really great colors in it. Well, it does, I mean, it has a lot of ordered structure in that river. But then within, there's a wonderful kind of nonsense.
And this
has things in it, 1885. There's a deer. And this is also from 1883, a similar kind of quilt with lots of images in it.
Birds.
We made a crazy quilt here at Holden in 1970. When our community worked on it.
Oh.
And then they sold it in the summer.
Oh.
Silent bids on it. And it was just from scraps that was left here.
Uh-huh.
Old clothes that got left.
Wonderful.
Turned out real pretty.
Do you remember what the fee was?
What the fee?
What the buying price was?
No, it was just called Crazy Quilt. There was no pattern to it. You know, it was just the color.
But in the auction,
everybody worked on it. You could do any embroidery stitch, like the feather stitching, blanket stitch, whatever, on it to put the pieces together. And then we put it up here in the balcony, and we worked together at the end. And put the binding on.
And what did it fetch?
I don't remember, but Carmen Strom was the one who bought it. And she lives over in London. You stay with her, you get to sleep under it sometimes.
Did you sell chances on it?
Silent bids.
Oh, silent bids.
This is called Crazy Quilt with Masonic Symbols. 1975. Was that white? Is that cloth or is that a stitch? The white borders.
Stitch cloth.
Well, you don't mean the outside border, you mean between squares.
Yes, or in between each little shape there's a white line.
I would guess it would be stitching. What kind of stitching?
It provides a lot of unity.
Yeah.
In this white line. Mm-hmm. Let's see, this is Crazy Quilt with a central basket. It needed a focal point.
Start someplace in their lots
of different patterns with the outside squares.
This goes back to nature again. This is called The Wild Goose Chase and Stars, and it's a Pennsylvania quilt from 1890. And it apparently refers to the flight of geese in the sky. That pattern really jumps around with those colors. Hard to look at. And this is called the Tree of Life.
That's the pattern I first helped my mother to quilt. My grandmother was making it when I was very small, and she was so frustrated with it. Mother said, forget the tree. We'll just put the blocks together without the stump. So it's a modified, I had it.
Oh, you had it.
Yeah, mother put it back in it when I was 11 and I helped quilt it. I'm glad to see one that's whole.
So you didn't have the trunks on the trees?
I don't have the trunks on the trees. They scooted the blocks together in reverse there so that the tops of two trees fit together, you see, with a square in the middle.
Oh.
And that way Grandma could handle it.
The woman is, her name is Irene Foster, and she's still living. You can go run down to Texas and look her up.
We're in Texas.
I'll have to get that book, but her town is listed in that book.
That's interesting.
This is called Crazy Quilt with a Rebus. I'm not sure I know what a rebus is.
That's
R-E-B-U-S. And the next one, I've never seen anything like it. It's called Tease. This is made in New York in 1910, and it's playing with the positive and negative shapes around the letter T. It's a very regular kind of pattern.
Strange. It's like a little joke.
I'm not sure where I found this next. I can't remember where I found the next quote, but it's made by an anonymous woman from Chile in 1970, and the subject matter is heaven and hell. And so here we have no geometric pattern, but more specific imagery with lambs and angels, and demons, fire.
Did she mean that as a hanging, do you think, or to go on a bed?
I think it's for a bed, but. It doesn't look as finely made as some of the things we've seen.
That could almost have been a reverse applique, because you have your dominant color, and in the third world, they often do the reverse applique, where they cut out the figure, and it allows the dominant color to come through, and then they applique on top other colors to bring out the design.
Mm-hmm. Like M something.
I think that's a reverse applique, I'm almost sure.
This next group are Amish quilts. And I think we could assume that there's a great deal of restraint here because of Amish proscriptions against ornament. They all tend to have some monumental, broad, simple forms in them. A very strong color. This is that around the world, trip around the world motif. It's also called Sunshine and Shadows and the Trip Around the World. This is Pennsylvania Amish from the 30s. This is the same motif, Sunshine and Shadows and the Trip Around the World, surrounded by those larger, simpler forms. It looks almost like wool or felt. Slide. They're very orderly in their choice of colors. I would guess that these are not scraps. They must be made on purpose, especially dyed materials. This is called lightning strikes and would relate to nature. Another Amish quote. And this one is simply called bars. 1930, Pennsylvania, and it looks like it has that texture inside. This is the log cabin motif plus barn raising, an Amish quilt from 1900 from Pennsylvania again. The next one is the nine patch. I would guess that the tradition probably spread to all the communities, and maybe they all share this simplicity. There's a nice texture in those beaver broad areas. This is from Wisconsin, from Amherst, Wisconsin. It's called a contained crazy quilt. I wonder if there might be some prohibition against crazy quilts, some religious unease with crazy quilts. You need to pull it together somehow. I have some sort of notion about Amish as very orderly, disciplined people. There's a lot of space in there, the way that black jumps out. And the next group, I just have a few more. These are modern quilts. This is a collaboration between some modern artists and some quilt makers. In the group will probably rebel against some of this stuff. Because these are painters who make paintings, and they get together with a quilt maker and say and ask them, no, this is the quilt, this is the quilt, this is not the painting. But they ask the quilt maker, can you figure out how to render this? And so this is a collaboration between the artist Charlotte Robinson and the quilter Bonnie Persinger. This is 1982, and the title of this piece is The Blue Mile. And it's a very rich, very active, free sort of composition. Let's see if the next one is the drawing. No, this is the quilt.
Yeah.
So let's go back and see. This is the painting, probably done with colored pencils to achieve some of that textural quality. It does indeed. Maybe it actually was drawn with a kind of watercolor medium on a fabric. I bet that's the way it was. And I like the kinds of choices that the quilt maker made. When you look at that sort of hilltop up there, it's much more simple, but this treatment of the flame-like forms is quite interesting. And that burst up at the top, it's more complicated in this medium. I don't think the intention, obviously, was to just imitate the original motif, but to translate it into this new material. This is Rosemary Wright's, and the man, the quilter was actually done, the quilting was actually done by a man named Bob Douglas, and it's the Mitchell family quilt. And I think it's the images of a family tree. This is the drawing. Kind of the textured paper, and this is the rendition of the quilt with Ma and Pa there in the middle, almost like Grant Wood's American Gothic.
Are you saying that the gentleman made the whole quilt, or is it possible that different parts of the family were asked to do a block representative of their group? Because that's done a lot.
Oh.
And then one person puts them all together.
Well, that's a possibility, sure. This maybe is just a general layout, and so that everybody would know kind of what the shape was, because this is different.
Our senior center, they call the art in there. each person made one block, and then they put it, and they got their name on it.
And nobody knew what the other block was going to be?
No.
This is Joyce Kozlov. Painter has moved towards a very decorative point of view. This is a colored pencil drawing. And she got together with a woman named Patricia Newkin, who organized the quilting. And this wouldn't be so hard to translate into a quilt. This is a quilt. Dorothy Gillespie did this piece, and this is the arrangement to the sound of a flute. This is made in honor of Jeff. I don't know if you can relate to that. Dorothy Gillespie, I think, was in residence this month at St. Catherine's College in St. Paul. And she's a very interesting woman who's doing sculpture pieces and textiles. She's sort of a rich camera, just does everything. And this is a piece that is done in collaboration. Obviously, it must be a wall hanging because of the way it's torn. And I have another piece by Dorothy Gillespie just called Untitled. And I think it's meant to be a walking. Faith Ringgold is a prominent black artist. She's a minority, both as a woman, trying to fight her way into an art market that's heavily loaded with sexual politics against her. She's also a black woman, so she's got another strike against her, but she's been able to be very productive, very active. And she did a collaborative piece. This is a felt pen drawing, and it's called Echoes of Harlem. This was the sketch for this quilt, done with a man named Will Posey, P-O-S-E-Y. And this is the way the quilt turned out. It looks like he is engaged in some painting on the cloth, and these parts are sewn together with borders of traditional piecework. This is called a signature quilt. And I think all of the women involved in this project, this was a project that received some national support, and all the women and the quilters, the collaborators, went together to make this. They made two signature quilts. Let's see, I hiked in Utah last spring and we found some cliff dwellings, and there are these universal handprints on the walls back in these caves, or these overhanging places. It seems to be something that everybody does. This is signature quilt number two, with the names all the way around the outside. This might be something like what your Albany group was doing.
Yes, except each one has some embroidery on it, or some applicant of different ones, but they had their names right on the little piece square.
Yes.
And then it was put together to the credit. And it's a wall piece, it's on the wall at our center.
See, I was wondering if that outside border is arbitrary, but I guess it's kind of a control vine motif. This painting is by a woman named Alice Barber. It looks like a watercolor. It's called The Road to the Center of the Earth. It's not really like George O'Keefe, but it's sort of in that direction of abstract shapes that seem to suggest some natural forms, and it all comes together at a central point. And this then became this quilt. Alice Barber and Edith Mitchell developed this quilt in 1980. And I'm sure you recognize a variety of stitches there. Let's see, I'll go back and show you the painting. This was the painting. this is the final quilt. Linda Bayless is a very active painter. This was her sketch, a paper collage. And I think that outside border, that zigzagging border, was retained in the quilt.